Hello, and welcome to Heart, Soul, and Data, where we explore the human side of analytics to help amplify the impacts of those out to change the world. With me, Alexandra Mannerines. Today, I am joined by Taj Carson from Insider, a company that helps nonprofits manage all the technology that goes into getting data working for you. Today, in our episode, we are going to talk about tool selection. We're going to talk about whether you should go with an all-in-one kind of data tool, or whether you should stitch together best-in-class options. And we'll talk about the importance of data quality management. But don't worry, we're not going to get too technical. We're going to tell you what you need to know and also when you may want to reach out for some expert help. So let's dive in. I am thrilled today to be joined by Taj Carson from Insider. I would love, Taj, to start with your origin story. How did you get to data and to creating Insider?
So I'll go way back just for fun. People can always speed it up if they want. But I was one of those people who would read there used to be this thing called the Bureau of Justice Sourcebook. Bureau of Justice Statistics Sourcebook. And it was literally, this was a long time ago. It was a book that was like, 3 inches thick. And it had all of the crime statistics in it. I mean, every locality, everything that was collected anywhere in Department of Justice. And I would actually leaf through it and look at the numbers because I was a dork. And for my first actual career in this space was I was a criminology professor, which scares people. But I actually started out as an academic. I was a professor of criminology. And I decided that I really didn't want to be in academia for a variety of reasons, some of which included the behavior of undergraduate students. I just liked the research better. And so I wanted to do more applied research. And so that took me into the evaluation space. I went from there to being the director of the Juvenile Justice Evaluation Center in DC. So that also brought me to DC and did a couple of three jobs. I won't get too detailed in, doing evaluation research. So some large scale sort of federal collaborative systems change, also working locally with, programs around children and families. So that space was the space from which I started Insider. And the reason I started it originally, we were Carson Research Consulting. We actually rebranded about 6 years ago. It's been 20 years. And I started it as an evaluation consulting firm because I felt like that there was a need for nonprofit organizations who didn't want sort of an academic style. I love academia, don't get me wrong. That didn't really want an academic style evaluation, like something you could turn into a journal article. They really need something that was more applied, that was a fit for what they were doing, what they needed to see or report out on, and that sort of respected the level of resources they had and helped them build capacity. So I started Insider 20 years ago to kind of do that. And pretty quickly, I would say within the first 5 years, I kept coming across this situation where we'd be working with a nonprofit organization and I'm struggling to get them an evaluation report. And it wasn't the only problem that I wanted to solve, right? Because I'm like, why don't you have any data? And I don't mean that in a callous way, but I was just like, why, not in a judgy way, why is there no data here? Why is the data missing? Why is the data? I'll give you one of my favorite stories, which is I was out doing a ride along in an HIV testing van because I really liked, if I could, to observe a program that I was going to analyze data on. And it was back when you had 20 minutes for the rapid, it was called. And so you got 20 minutes in a van with somebody who's high risk with the counselor to talk to the person and say what their risks might be and help to counsel them. And they don't know what the result is going to be. So it's a really powerful 20 minutes when you could really influence someone around behavior change. And I watched them spend the whole 20 minutes filling out forms for people like me. So they were filling out all these forms for, the CDC and the evaluators, and they were all, pen and paper because this is, 15, 16, 17 years ago. But the worst part was that when I got back to the office to do what they wanted me to do, which was to take all of this data they had in these paper files and consolidate it, we were going to put it into Excel and just kind of clean it all up and actually analyze it so they could learn something. I couldn't do anything with it because it was illegible. It was missing. People didn't fill out the forms properly, probably because they're trying to do more important things, right? That sort of got me started to there's just got to be a better way to do this. And so initially I began, this might sound weird, but I initially began thinking about, I thought at both ends, thinking about inputs. So how do you get data into the system? This was before tablets. I know I sound like I was a scribe writing on a piece of concrete. And this is right before tablets. And the other piece was how do you get the data out of a system so that people can actually use it and make sense of it? So while I was trying to figure out, we started with Excel templates and then helping to make Excel a lot easier and enforce data validation in Excel and things like that. But then we started doing data visualization work, which initially was dashboards using a variety of different tools, but also, you know, illustrative data visualization work. And so I started at that end. And then I naively was like, and this is part of it, right? It's like, how can we make data more understandable for people who aren't dorks like me? How can I make it easier to communicate with data and to get that information? And then we started also kind of doing some work in the middle, because people would have these data systems, case management systems or grants management systems, and they would be like, I can't figure this out. So sometimes we would just manage it for them. Sometimes we would enter the data. Sometimes we'd wrestle the data out of it. And then tablets were designed and I could forget about the input piece so much. That just wasn't such a big problem. I'm not saying it's not an issue at all. I actually ended up going back to school to get a master's in information visualization because I loved it so much. And I knew there was more that we could do. And at some point, I would say about 5 years ago, so we're doing this, we're doing data visualization work. We're helping people with BI tools. So like Tableau, Power BI, we're helping people kind of wrangle their data systems that aren't working very well for them. And kind of serving in that role of like almost like an external arm for your data people so that you didn't have to be the data people. So for the people who loved being an accidental data analyst, we might support them, or maybe you just don't really want to have to be an accidental data analyst or have an accidental data analytics department. And then clients started saying to us, you know, I have all these systems and I don't want another system, but I want my systems to play better together. And so that's where we sort of moved into this model of helping people with data in silos to get the data out of the silos and into a data warehouse and connecting it to a business intelligence tool. For us, it's either going to be Tableau or Power BI. Those are kind of the two big ones, and every part of that, right? So that's kind of where we are now. Now, we still do a lot of evaluation work. We also have evaluation projects where we are taking siloed evaluation data and storing that in the warehouse and delivering it to folks in Power BI and Tableau so they can actually see their evaluation data and engage with it. But that's kind of the whole story from, so I didn't come from the technical space, but I came from the data space. And then now we're doing more of the, you know, I have people who do more of the advanced technical work around the data analytics and warehousing.
I love that. And I love that in your creation story, right? Like where you came from, where Insider came from, that you encountered so many of the same, like the problems along the same arc that an individual nonprofit would do as well. Right? That you have a nonprofit and they've got a program, right? They're doing their programs. And then as they try to turn any kinds of information they're collecting from that program into insights that they can use to help support strengthening those programs, advancing those programs, they're going to run into every single one of those things that you talked about. Right?
Yeah.
And so, and also they may sort of go through a similar journey, which is we have things written down on paper. Still happens today, right? Down on paper, like it's still happening. And then you migrate to being able to collect it in a more standardized way, but then it finally goes into a system and then you can't get it out of the system, or you get it out of a system, but now you have to get it out of 20 systems, right? And so that whole arc, I do think, is one that will sound familiar to a lot of folks who are listening.
Yeah.
So,
I think my favorite, we call it data jail. If somebody's got a system they can't get the data out of. And I think my favorite almost literal data jail was like somebody had a system, I won't name names, and they needed to migrate to another system. And the provider told them that they would have to pay to have their data unencrypted.
Oh my gosh.
That's my
favorite data jail. What hackers do. Right?
Right. Well, it's like encrypting the data at rest makes sense. Like that's good data security, but like you're not supposed to have to, you know, make your client pay to get their data unencrypted. It's encrypted for security purposes, but you know, unencryption is not right.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I've had similar issues mostly with a few EMR, like electronic medical record providers, where they're like, no, you can use the data if you access it through our proprietary data visualization tool. But if you actually want to get the data that we're keeping, you have to pay like an obscene amount of money to have connections. And then some of them are just like, and yeah, we didn't build those tables for you, so you can't have access to them. Okay, so it's there. And when you said, well, aren't I supposed to be able to like get it? They're like, you can just open each patient's record and the information's in there.
Yeah, that makes sense for an EMR because of how they're designed. right? Like they're not designed for analytics first. They're designed for patient care first. Yeah, we also had a client that were doing domestic violence services in a hospital-based setting, and they couldn't use the electronic medical record system because it can be subpoenaed. So there's all of these like really good like data use, right? So they need a separate system, and it took them forever to convince the hospital administrators that they needed funding. Because they kept saying, just have the IT department build it. It's like, there's this risk that, you know, a woman's usually, you know, address could be revealed to an abuser if it's in the same system.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, and all those things that have to be thought about. And I think that that is a great transition to this point that when you're building technical systems, while they feel like technical problems, there's so much quote unquote non-technical parts that have to be considered in this development, you know, that you have to think about. Your story of the ride along is so interesting because you're saying, I have to understand where the data are coming from, who's going to be inputting this, what's the situations under which they're going to be doing it, considering what is it that we need to collect that would actually be meaningful, right? You have to sort of make all of those decisions. And so I was wondering if you could help us understand a little bit of that journey when a nonprofit faces that tool selection problem, right? Because I do think that they are like, oh, I just had to pick the right piece of software and all my data woes go away. So could you talk us a little bit about that tool tech selection process that we often face?
Yeah, I'm going to blame that on salespeople. I'm going to do it, right? I know it's their job. Like, you know, I get it. But there's a thing that happens where, and some vendors are worse about this than others, about saying like, oh, it'll do everything. Like, this is my favorite thing that makes my hair catch fire now is like, it'll do everything. Anything you say, it'll do that, it'll do that, it'll do that. So they, you know, it's almost like if you were going to buy a car, right? And they were telling you it was a self-driving car, but it's not, right? It's very much like they're trying to sell you a self-driving car, but it is not at all a self-driving car. And you need to go to driving school. That's totally what it's like, except they know it's not a self-driving car. So knock it off. But I've even seen people sell like case management software or other sort of nonprofit online databases and sort of pretend like you don't need evaluation. It'll just do your evaluation. And I was like, it's not going to help you figure out if you've got the right indicators. It's not going to compare your indicators to the literature to make sure that for what you're doing, this is actually the thing that you should measure. It's not going to help you figure out if you're measuring an outcome that is too far reaching or not far reaching enough. It can store data about your outcomes, but it can't tell you if they're the right ones. There's also this thing where sometimes this really depends on the system. And I don't think Salesforce gets sold this way, but sometimes people think of it this way. And partially it's, you know, they just want to buy or use one thing, which I totally have empathy for. They try to shove everything into one system. And it could be their Access database. It could be Salesforce. It could be, you know, a Microsoft Dynamics system. It could be their case management. Like I've seen people take case management and try to shove their grants management into it and just everything. And it can work, but you have to really be thoughtful about it. But the tool is just a tool, right? I mean, it's just a tool. And I often think of us as kind of like plumbers, right? But it's just a tool. It can do what it can do. I'm going to draw another parallel to research, right? So in the research space, people often talk about qualitative research and they're just like, well, but it's not really, you know, and it's like, as long as it's rigorous, that's what matters. It doesn't matter if it's qualitative or quantitative. Are you asking the right question in the right way, the same way every time? Do you have validated instruments? Are you collecting the data, right? Is it consistent? Is it rigorous? It's very similar for a data system. You know, it has certain features. It will do certain things. You have to use it in a rigorous way. But then there's also very much like a buyer beware. So if organizations don't get really clear before they go shopping, I think I could probably beat the car analogy to death if I wanted to. You know, it's a really shiny, expensive thing with all-wheel drive, but you're in Arizona and you don't really need, it doesn't snow. So you really want to be like, what do I need this car to do? Do I have 6 kids who go to soccer or is it just me? Do I need all-wheel drive? Do I need, you know, again, you're in Arizona with your seat heaters. But so really thinking independently of the tool. Because when you go into the demo, and I see this again, I've sat in a lot of demos. When you go into a demo, everything just looks so shiny and happy. And what they really do in a demo is they walk you through the interface. And it's really hard to tell from a demo how it actually functions. So that's the pieces to get really clear, just like you would if you were going shopping for a house or a car or something else expensive, is to be like, what do I need? What does it need to do? What's important? what's not the most important, because you also may find something that's actually fourth or fifth on your priority list that ends up selling you on something because it's very upfront, but really there's something that's a one or a two that just flipped your mind as soon as you got into the demo, and everything just looks really, really good. Sometimes that one or that two can be like user licenses, right? Like, how much does it cost for each user license? And you just forget to ask that because you're like, oh, look, it can do this. And the reporting is, oh, charts and graphs. Like, I can't tell how many times I've seen, look at the pretty charts and graphs, but it's like the data that's pulling into the charts and graphs is really hard to see. It's kind of impossible to see in a demo and know if it's correct. So really, you really want to kind of dig into that and sort of what it's able to do. And of course, the reporting piece is the piece we focus on most. Like, we don't do software selection, look at the front end, but a lot of times what happens is people are trying to shove everything in there. And the other thing is there's a thing going on right now that people can be aware of, which is this idea of like best in class versus all in one. So all-in-one is when you're like, Salesforce is going to do absolutely everything for us. And so I'm just using Salesforce as an example, or Microsoft Dynamics or other kind of platforms. Like, we're going to have it do everything. Or sometimes there will be a vendor that says it's all-in-one. It's highly customizable. You can do anything with it. And that's an all-in-one approach. It can be perfectly fine. But sometimes an organization is, you know, we're using MailChimp. And it works really, really well. Our communications people love it. It's easy to use. We understand it. All of our users are in there. We don't have to migrate. Everything's set up, or HubSpot or whatever. And you've got something else you're using. We're using something else for our case management system. Say we're using Apricot or whatever. That works really, really well. You don't necessarily need to move to something that's all in one. Then you've got the silos, right? So sometimes the silos come because you've got multiple things that really do work best for you. Each one works best for each department. You don't necessarily have people who need to use the same thing because the development department likes what they've got. The case managers like what they've got. And then this is where you end up with this sort of situation of like, when do you need to pull data from across systems? And it's another one of those things you need to think about and know in advance when you're picking out software. Is like, how do I need this to come together? Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you only need certain things to come together, and kind of having that in mind when you're looking around is very helpful too.
I think to expand on that car analogy, and I've talked about this with another guest before, that what you're saying is you have to decide is what you want a car that could go everywhere, right? Like, that you're just going to drive everywhere you go. Or would you rather have one car that you drive while you're in Denver, and then you drive that car to the airport, and then you're going to take a plane to, you know, wherever else you're going to go. And then maybe you'll mm-hmm. rent a bicycle while you're there, and you'll ride around on your bicycle, and then you'll come back to the airport and you'll fly, right? Like, and you have to think, right. All right, do I have this one thing that's going to do all of it for me? Or am I going to piece together something? And if I piece it together, then do those connections work properly? Right. And I think that can be a bit overwhelming to think about, well, how do you like stitch all those pieces together? But I mean, in your case, do you counsel... Do you have a preference? Would you say try to find that sort of all-in-one solution, or would you counsel looking for best in class and dealing with the integration challenges? What's your recommendation?
It's very situational, right? So if your data's for some organizations, they have the capacity to make the all-in-one tool do what they need it to do. They have the knowledge and the expertise internally to build it properly, or to have someone build it properly. They have confirmed that they can get everything they need into that system, and that they can get all the reports that they need from within that system. That can be a really good fit for them. They need to look out for shadow data. Somebody's got some spreadsheet over there that they've got, and it's got really important stuff in it. And sometimes they don't want to put it in the system because the system's not built for them, or sometimes they don't trust the system, or sometimes it's totally fine on their desktop in their Google Drive, and they're the only one who uses it and accesses it. It's fine. So, but you have to keep an eye out for that, because shadow data is one of those things that I'm always like, wait, what is that? I just listen for the spreadsheet. You know, I've got a client right now who's talking about someone's built a database and nobody wants to talk about it, and they don't seem to know what's in it, but I suspect it's really important. I'm like, we're going to dig into that. So it really depends. It really depends. And then if you've got an organization that's got everything that's separate, do you need to bring it together? And if you don't, that can work fine. If you do need to bring it together, one of two things is probably going to happen. somebody's either going to be pulling a bunch of CSV files out of those systems and knitting them together, which can also work well if you've got like an Excel guru or there's not a lot. And by a lot, it's not usually like the amount of data, it's the different types of data and sort of how you bring those together and how much they align. Does it need to be relational? It may not, right? So you might have five different data systems and your best reporting looks like five completely different sets of charts and graphs and tables, right? And that can work fine too. Like each system could output the reports that you need and you can put them together in a PDF or a slide deck or whatever. But if you need them to be relational, that gets a lot more complicated. If you need it to happen frequently, that gets a lot more complicated. So then you start looking at something that looks like data pipelines in a warehouse. But you don't want to go there unless you need to. And no matter what you do, your data governance, your data rigor, it's going to influence everything. So the other thing is like never get ahead with the technology if you haven't covered your bases around data quality, everybody understanding the data definitions in the same way, documenting where things are, having clear data management policies with your sensitive data, like all that stuff is going to be. And I think sometimes people also think that's really hard. Let me just go choose this shiny new tool. But that shiny tool is definitely not going to handle your data practices and your policies and that just sort of day-to-day work that makes it valuable.
And I had a guest come to talk entirely about data governance because I think that is something that is so important that often doesn't even register as something to be concerned about. And I think the interesting thing is that sometimes people only think they have to do that like when they get lots of data. And you're like, well, no, actually, that's got to be from the first time you collect anything that you're going to store, right? Because there needs to be an assessment of how sensitive is it. Are there laws governing that? Are there ethics governing how you store it and who has access to it? And then if you want it to be useful for more than the nanosecond that, you know, it first came into existence, you need to have some kind of consistency and documentation about what it is, what it means, and how people continue to generate it. And so I think that's a really good point that like that has to be sort of your first consideration no matter what tools you're doing. But it becomes even more important when you start to knit those different systems together in that your data governance has to be just as interconnected. Right? You can't have one set of data governance for one platform and a totally different one over here. And then you're trying to line up pieces and say that A equals A when in fact they've been arrived at in completely different ways. So that's a really good point about the data governance.
Yeah. The other thing I'll say is if you have data silos, do not be embarrassed. Everyone has data silos. If you have shadow data, everyone's got shadow data. And data governance also, it's a place you never get to. Right. It's kind of like HIPAA compliance that way. So also know data governance, I think some people just can't even bear to look at it because it seems so complicated. But like you're already doing it.
Yes.
Like if you're thinking at all about data entry or data quality or if the data is clean, and I guarantee you that you are on some level, someone, it might just be like one person over in the corner, somebody's doing it. But just know that it's a continuum. You're already doing it. And it's really just about how do you get better? How do you get better at it? And, you know, how do you get to sort of start by getting to kind of good enough? Mm-hmm. Like I was thinking when you were talking about, it's like, let's say you had a bank account and you only had 10 transactions a month, right? It's not a lot of data, but imagine if you couldn't tell the difference, or you couldn't agree on whether it was a withdrawal or deposit, right? Or if the numbers weren't right. It's like that. It's just like, so that's a low. It doesn't really matter how much it is. You're going to need to think about that and just try to get better at it. Mm-hmm.
And I think that in terms of the like don't feel embarrassed, really it's not a judgment of like you're doing it wrong or you're doing it right. The question is like, is it working for you? And so having an Excel spreadsheet that lives on your desktop, as long as it's working for you, do that. Like nobody's going to judge you for doing it that way. Like I have people sometimes come and tell me like, oh, we need to upgrade because we're still using blank. And you're like, well, you don't need to upgrade just because that's quote unquote old or whatever, right? Like you need to have a problem that's saying we can't do X, Y, and Z with our current system and we really need to or are wanting to move in that direction. And that is when you say, all right, we need a new system or we need to change something or whatever it might be.
Right. And that's a really good point too, to help people avoid shiny object syndrome, right? Is to really be like, what's it not doing that you need it to do? Or what are you not able to do? Because of features and functions that it doesn't have. And how important is that? And I think that's right up there with the whole how important is the data. Like people often are just like, let's just shove all the data somewhere into something. And it's the same thing, like sort of prioritizing, like, is it important data? You know, that 20-year-old data, I'm pretty sure you're not making any decisions with it.
Right.
I mean, you might be. There might be a rare exception, but like, yeah. And so often if we've migrated data, sometimes people will say, when we get them thinking about it, they're like, I only need the last 2 years of data. It's like all that other data and all the problems that are in it. You can just archive it,
right.
Store it. But yeah.
I feel like I take the same approach that I sometimes do with my kids when we're trying to clean out their room, which is mm-hmm. We don't have to get rid of it. Why don't we just put it in this box and we'll put it over in the closet? And if in 6 months you haven't had to take it out and play with it, maybe then we could talk about getting rid of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And by then you've kind of, yeah, and it's sort of like when I move, I moved a lot when I was younger, especially like almost every year. And there were certain boxes, like after like 6 months, if I hadn't, I'd usually look and be like, I clearly don't need this. Like, unless it's like important, like from childhood or whatever. Yeah. So it's kind of like that. It's like, it's nice to kind of let things sit and give yourself time to be like, yeah, I really don't need that. But, and you can always just store it. You can always archive it. It doesn't have to be. Yeah.
You don't have to permanently delete it, but you can put it on your systems and not worry about the problems.
Exactly.
So you've been bringing a lot of the different things we have to think about, like you said, and connect those, the organizational needs to the technical systems that we're trying to develop. But can we talk a little bit more about how we then, you know, we talked about that the tool isn't the solution itself, right? The tool is one thing that we're going to bring into play to try to tackle some of these bigger questions that we have. And oftentimes we're trying to drive at like real information that we need to make decisions in our organization. But the connection between the technical tools and those information needs is sometimes hard to see. Like technical folks get really focused on the technical development. The frontline business workers are like, but I just need to know this and I don't care how hard it is or I don't care what it takes to do this. Like just get me this piece of information. So how do you start to bridge those like very different needs and discussions so that you do build a system that can kind of seamlessly arc from one to the other?
So when I first started an evaluation, one of my favorite tools was the logic model. And it's probably not a surprise since it's basically an information visualization tool. But I really loved logic modeling. And the first thing I would do, and we still do this with evaluation clients, is I'd say like, let's look at your logic model. Let's create a logic model. And it's essentially data strategy, right? And people think data strategy is like a 3-day retreat with a consultant or something, but it's not necessarily. And I would say, okay, let's really look at, like, forget about what you have. Let's look at what you're doing, what you need to know, what decisions you need to make. And so in the evaluation space, that kind of looks like, what are the key indicators that measure what you're doing and how well you're doing it? And what are the key indicators that would measure the appropriate outcomes? It's the same exact logic. Like I also did strategic planning in the past and it's the same logic, right? Like, what do we need to know? And then where does that come from? Like where, and by where does it come from? It can be, that's question number 7 on the survey. And then connecting that to like, where is it stored? So that's usually like it's really helpful if it's a visual tool, something that maps out, this is what we need to know. This is, you know, what it looks like, what the data source is. Because the data source, again, it could be third-party data. It could be survey data. It could be, you know, program data that you're collecting. It could be finance data. And then, you know, where is it located? Like what system? It's in a folder. It's on somebody's desktop. It's in a vendor system. All good. Just like, where is it? The other thing that we do increasingly is similar in that we create data models. So we had a client that had, I think, 6 different types of data systems. They had like events data. They had like a member database. They had a bunch of other things. And we created a data model that essentially mapped what fields the data came from, what fields and systems the data came from, and how those fields needed to come together to give them the reports that they needed and the format of the reports. That's a more technical document because we're really mapping it specifically to fields in sources. And that is system dependent, right? Because we're saying from Zoom, we're going to get, you know, how many webinars people went to, or from MailChimp, we're going to get, you know, what things they clicked on or how much engagement they've had. You know, then you might have from SurveyMonkey, we're going to get sort of the pre and post test assessment. We're going to pull that in, but mapping that out either specific to what you're already collecting or being willing to take it up a level, which should we be collecting? You kind of have to balance between the two, because sometimes people will just go down that this is what we're collecting as if that's the end of the road. They can get into a space where they assume that because we're collecting it, it's important. I'm really sorry you spent all that time on that piece of information, but it's actually not important. Or maybe it is, but like, let's question that a little bit. And so either they get really stuck in like, this is what we do and it all must be important, or it gets very theoretical. Here's what we want to do, and we have no capacity to collect that information and no idea where it's going to come from. So it's, I always say it's like part art and part science. And even though the logic model and the data model are usually for different purposes, because the logic model is, you know, sort of evaluation planning and strategy, and the data model is usual, you know, data architecture planning and strategy. But it's again, it's sort of that the balance, what's important is the balance between here's what we want to be doing and here's what we're actually doing, and sort of holding those in attention with each other.
That makes total sense. And I think that so much of this journey is that balance between sort of opposing poles. Like you said, whether the best in class or the all-in-one, that you're trying to balance this idea of like, what is it that's actually most important? Because you're always going to have to optimize. You're going to have to make choices about what gives in order to get the parts that you've decided are the most important. And so being conscious about that. And I'm very guilty of the getting stuck in both of those rabbit holes of what are we collecting versus what we should be collecting. That it's very easy to be like, here's all the great stuff we could do. We should answer all these questions. And you're like, yeah, there's no chance of that happening versus yeah. The other ones, you know, that you're like, well, here's all the data we have, like here's all the stuff I can calculate from this data or whatever it is, and not thinking about what it is that actually would be useful. So I, you know, constantly kind of going back and forth between those is really important.
It's like adding a question to a survey, right? I used to tell people, pretend you're the census department where every time you add a question, it's like $8 million, right? And we also used to always say, nice to know's got to go. If you have limited resources, nice to know's got to go. It's got to be like, we have to know this. Like, this is the most important stuff. And this is where sometimes an outsider can be helpful, or someone in your organization who can play who can stand in the space of an outsider, right? And not get caught into the culture of like, but we've always done this. And of course, this is important. So if you find a person with that voice, like, yeah, lift them up and allow them to ask those questions.
If you think about the skill sets that need to come to bear to solve these kinds of problems, you know, a lot of nonprofits, I think, get stuck because they feel like, well, we don't have anybody who does that. We don't have anybody who can do any of these elements that you're talking about. So what should a sort of small to medium size nonprofit think about the skills that they should have in-house? And then what do they need to think about in terms of finding skills to fill in some of those gaps that they might need in order to do, you know, this whole journey, whether it's the strategy, the actual mapping, the technical development, the management, the analysis, and the ongoing day-to-day usage of the data?
Mm-hmm. So I think there's a couple of things that happen, right? So one is like you get an organization that has a data strategy that's far beyond its skill set and the capacity of its people. So you kind of have to make them match, right? You want a data strategy that aligns with your capacity internally. So that means, you know, in the leadership, you need people who are able to prioritize and make those decisions about what's important. And then for execution, you need people who are able to collect, clean, and analyze data. Now, that could be for a smaller organization, you've got an accidental data analyst who's entering data in an Excel spreadsheet and they know how to make it do basic calculations, and that's fine. Please, if you're a tiny organization, do not ask that poor person to bring together and create a relational database out of six different things and then make it do backflips in Tableau. You've got to sort of be aware of this is all the data strategy we can execute at our size with our capacity. And so sometimes that means you've got to say, here's the data strategy. This is the piece of it that's most important and that we have the skills to execute. And then I think as you grow, the decision you have to make is, do we want to build our internal capacity or do we want to partner? They're both excellent options. I think one of the challenges that smaller organizations have is if you're small, you probably have a data analyst. And then where they get in trouble is when the data analyst leaves. And then there's nothing. And it's just part of being small, right? It's like when one person needs. So I think one of the things you can do, and this is going to be really boring, is documentation. I would highly recommend if you have only one person, especially anybody, everyone should be doing it. But boy, you really better make sure your accidental data analyst, one, is documenting. How do they create the reports? How do they clean the data? Where does everything live? How do they pull the spreadsheets together? That can grow with you. So every time, you know, as you're growing, make sure you're doing documentation and having people write it down. That means that people can move into different roles. Somebody can grow out of that role and maybe they become, I don't know, the director of who knows what. There's a lot of ways to go from there. And then somebody else needs to come in and be the data analyst and they've got, right, the structure. So, and then deciding whether to partner is really just you've got the resources, but do you want to support them internally? Do you want to have to know how to hire data people? Do you want to manage data people? Do you want to keep that? And you absolutely may. Or do you want like a trusted partner? But having like being that we are often that trusted partner, it's hardest when we sort of dip in and out. Now we absolutely will dip in if somebody's got like a gap and, you know, they're hiring and we'll even help them interview and get the person in place and you're good. Right. But being like, oh, we've got a crisis. We're going to call in our data partner. And then the crisis, right. The reporting season is over. Like that's just crazy. That's crazy making for everyone. So I would say either build your capacity or choose a partner. Now a partner can help you build capacity. Absolutely. A partner can sort of step in temporarily, but you have to have what your primary strategy is. You're either, you know, trying to build internally or partnering. I call us a data MSP, which is a managed service provider. So people have IT MSPs that handle all their IT. We're a data MSP, but we also have a long history of capacity building. So, but make it a conscious decision so that it's not sort of just a, well, we had Jim and he was really good at that. And now he's gone. And now we have no idea. So just be really conscientious about what your strategy is. Even if it's an opportunistic strategy, it can still be like, this is our strategy for now for this reason.
I love that. I think if we could do one thing with data, it's like make intentional choices about how you're doing it rather than these accidental data choices. Because you're making the choices. It's just, are they the ones that you've thought about and are actually the ones that you really would want to make?
And understand what skills are needed and the capacity of your data analyst. Like we had somebody the other day who was like, it was a data, like kind of a junior data analyst. And they're like, you can just go build a warehouse, right? And this person was like frantically trying to figure out, and I'm like, you got to be like a developer and you got to know cybersecurity and you've got to know like so many things that you don't need to know necessarily as a data analyst. But like the higher ups had no, they just don't know that. So also being aware of which roles come with which skills and sort of when you're asking somebody to do something very dangerous, like just kind of figure out by the seat of their pants how to secure what was actually very sensitive data when they don't actually know how to, play with those tools.
I think that makes a lot of sense. So if we could recommend one action that someone listening today could take near term, that would help them, I don't know, either take that next step in their data journey or help them recognize where their biggest gaps were. What would you recommend somebody do right now that would move the needle for them?
If by somebody you mean an organization, I would recommend, because that'd be different if it was like an actual like specific person. I would say, this is gonna be really boring, but it matters. Come up with some way that you regularly assess your data quality. It is doable for every organization. You might just have a spreadsheet and you might just run some descriptive statistics and see if they look okay. You might have some very simple way of seeing how much missing data you have. It'll be different for everyone, but it doesn't matter what tool you're using. You could even have a stack of folders and randomly pull 20 and do a data audit, right? Everybody can have some kind of a regular, not just when you're in crisis and all of a sudden the reports don't look right, like a regular data cleaning, data quality check and sort of processes and protocols. That sounds fancier than I mean, but like some way, weekly, monthly, depends on how often your data changes, that you can check and see what's going on with your data. And maybe it's just your most important data and not wait until you get a report that doesn't look right to then try to reverse engineer it.
I think that makes so much sense because it's that wellness check is tied to almost every single component that we talked about through this interview, right? That you'll be able to identify, are there data input problems? Are there data pipeline problems? Are there data integration problems? Are there data governance problems? Or are we just measuring the wrong thing, right? Like in your data quality check, you may say like, oh, no, everything checked out and yet I still don't know the answer. Right? I still have the information that I need, the wrong thing, and need to go back and figure this out. I feel like it's kind of like going to the doctor and getting like your blood pressure and temperature checked. right? That those just like sort of simple, hey, are all our vitals doing okay, can link to so many other areas that then can be an alert that something's not right.
Right. You don't want to wait until you're like your temperature is 105 degrees and they have to rush you to the hospital. You'd like to be like, it's a 99. Right. There might be going on here. That's a really good analogy. It's like, don't wait until you actually fall out.
Right.
Preventative healthcare as an analogy for data cleaning. Very good.
I love it. It's all the wellness. So yeah. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today. If folks want to learn more about you or about Insider, where could they go?
So they can go to our website, which is Insider. That's not .org, it's .org. And right there on the homepage, there's a place where you can sign up for a free consultation. Like, we just love to talk to people with whatever kind of data challenges, like dual data therapy with people. They can always book a consultation with us. You can also see our little 2-minute explainer video. So if you're like, what do you guys actually do? That's on there. And you can see our blog. We have, we actually have a few recent blogs on data governance. We have all kinds of different, you know, we write those to sort of be helpful to people and kind of educate the community. And you can also sign up for our newsletter there.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
That was the marvelous Taj Carson from Insider. Make sure to check out Insider. There's a link in the show notes to her organization as well as other resources that she shared. Just to recap, here's what we covered today. Data governance is crucial from the first time the data is collected, and it gets even more important if you're going to want to integrate systems. That connection between technical tools and information, you need to be bridging with logic models, with your data models, to make sure that you're picking the right metrics and the data are going to the people who need it in the ways that they need it to make the best decisions. 3, organizations should make intentional choices about their data strategy, considering their capacity and their priorities of what matter most to them. We find that we kind of make accidental decisions, right? Or fall into decisions by default instead of really being intentional about the choices we make with our data strategy and thus the tools we bring in to help us with it. All right, 4, if you're a small or medium-sized nonprofit, you need to be honest about the skills and capacity that you have internally. And for something that you just aren't ready to take on yourself, look to outside experts to partner with. And when you can, try to find those long-term partners who are going to help you and be there with you rather than creating a one-off, unsustainable kind of data solution. And lastly, don't forget the data quality assessments. Data is not a one-time thing. Real data processes are cyclic. We always come back to the same things again and again, in part as we grow, but also because they just need maintenance like all of our other systems. So make sure you put the effort into keeping your data high quality so that you have accurate and reliable data for your decision-making. So thank you so much for joining me and Taj today. I am excited to have you along this journey, and I wish you so much joy as you find data for your great deeds. You have been listening to Heart, Soul, and Data. This podcast is brought to you by Maracanus, an analytics education, consulting, and data services company devoted to helping nonprofits and social enterprises amplify their impacts and thrive through data. You can learn more at Maracanos.com, MERAKINOS.com.